Quick heads up before we start. This episode is about sex education in New Hampshire. So we talk about sex, as well as topics like porn, sexuality, and gender. Here's the episode.
I've often wondered what it would be like if we taught young people swimming in the same way we teach sexuality. If we told them that swimming was an important adult activity, one that they will all have to be skilled at when they grow up, but we never talked with them about it. We just allowed them to stand outside closed doors and listen to all the splashing.
This is Maura Barber. She's reciting an excerpt from Sex and Swimming.
Occasionally, they might catch a glimpse of partially clothed people going in and out of the door to the pool, and maybe they'd find a hidden book on the art of swimming. But when they asked a question about how swimming felt or what it was about, when they would be greeted with blank or embarrassed looks, or they told weren't old enough to know, suddenly, when they turned 18, we would fling open the doors to the pool and they would jump in. Miraculously, some might learn to tread water, but many would drown.
This reading, it's part of the sex education class Maura Barber teaches called OWL, or Our Whole Lives, at the Unitarian Universalist Church. She teaches at the Manchester location, but there are programs all over the state. And OWL is one of the few sex ed courses in New Hampshire that takes place outside of school. And the swimming story she told, it's how she often begins the orientation for parents. This story evokes such a vivid image that is very relatable. Being shut out. Left to figure it out on your own, bub. And when you tell kids, sorry, you can't know, well, their need to know naturally grows a millionfold. So this story has left me with a question. What are kids doing when they're waiting outside those doors?
Welcome to the second greatest show on earth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Justine Paradise. Second Greatest is the show where our listeners ask us questions about New Hampshire, and we search for the answers and doggy paddle into the deep end. This is the second episode of our series on sex ed in New Hampshire, and we got a lot of great questions for this topic.
Are they talking about consent? Are they talking about what sexual harassment is and isn't?
I worry about a lot of young people learning, you know, from porn, and I hear young people talk about like what they think they need to do rather than what they really want to do.
I guess how are kids being taught and how do parents feel about how kids are being taught?
I would worry about that, but I don't know how to put that in exactly in the form of a question.
Our first episode really focused on statewide curriculum. But in all reality, let's be honest, at least when it comes to sex ed, for a lot of teenagers, school is where a minimal amount of the learning really happens. So in part two of our series on sex ed, we talk to the teens. But with new and increasing pressures like the influence of social media and porn and sky-high expectations on how to fit in as a girl or boy or any gender in society, it's no wonder that many kids might struggle to keep their head above water in the swimming pool of sexuality. To start us off today, here's producer Sarah Ernst.
Confidentiality. What happens in the owl room stays in the owl room. Be safe. End on time. Make an effort. Use I language. Pass if you don't want to share.
These are the rules of the room at OWL. OWL is Our Whole Lives, a program on sexuality at Unitarian Universalist churches across the country. And not just church kids go. It's open to everybody. The one in Manchester is held in a cozy room in the basement of the church. There's a couch, chairs, a chalkboard with some posters pinned on the wall. And the program has the typical fixings of a sex ed class. They go over anatomy, STIs, and pregnancy. But they also cover lots of topics that schools often skip. Gender identity and sexual orientation. And yes, they are a church. As well as body image, relationship skills. They even have a workshop called Love Making. And consent.
Consent is a huge aspect of what we teach here, because it's important for students to know that this is your body.
In OWL, teaching consent starts at a really young age and is tailored for each age level.
For example, kindergartners, you know, this is my hand. This is not your hand. You know, I'm in charge of my own hand.
And they teach that consent doesn't just pertain to physical touching, but it's a boundary to be respected in many parts of life.
I do not consent to wanting to participate in going to a party where something may be happening that I'm not ready to participate in. So it's important that students need to know that you have the right to refuse.
And what makes this class categorically different from school is they don't stick strictly to the curriculum. The main focus is dialogue, not to talk at students, but to talk with them. Some classes get totally derailed by curiosity, and that's okay.
One of our students in our 7th through 9th grade shared about a peer in school, felt that they couldn't take it anymore in their relationship and didn't know what to do. And the student who was in the OWL class looked at us and said, I wasn't really sure what to say to her. And it got to be a very, very serious conversation.
We, of course, asked to sit in on a class, but they respectfully declined because of how seriously they respect the safe space. The last and possibly most important tenet of the OWL program can be found in their name, Our Whole Lives. More than anything, the program really emphasizes sex education as lifelong learning. They have a class specifically for older adults. The minimum age to receive admission is 50. But even though OWL is not school, it still resembles school in lots of ways. Textbook, curriculum, and lectures. But in all reality, we have to take into account informal sex education. That comes from social media, that comes from stories told by older siblings, and more than anything, the influence of their friends and people their age. Because, oh boy, that kind of education is not theoretical. That education is applied.
Like, if you have a question, where do you go?
Friends, people like Ashley, like someone like, yeah, someone I'll feel comfortable girls with, like, that's an adult. And like, I would actually trust this group, like, because, like, you know, like, you have told some stuff too.
I'm at the Boys and Girls Club in Manchester talking to a group of 15-year-old girls. Well, to be honest, I'm just mostly sitting in the back and listening, along with the group's facilitators, Shirley Tomlinson and Ashley Rodriguez. The group is called
Girls Group or Boss Girls, so we're still getting used to it ourselves.
They recently changed the name to Boss Girls by popular demand. The group runs once a week, and the girls come to talk about everything under the sun. Relationship issues, friendships, hookup culture, school, anything that's on their minds. And listening to them talk with one another for over an hour, I came to realize that being a teenage girl is hard. Because they're receiving mixed messages from all angles. Pressure from their classmates to fit in, pressure from boys to have sex, and pressure from their parents to stay, quote-unquote, pure. Ashley and Shirley work with these kids and know them personally. They say the pressures of fitting in are especially unique today because fitting in isn't just at school. It's all the time and it's everywhere. Because of social media.
The pressure that they have, like, on them. Like, if you're in a relationship, oh, well, you're supposed to be having sex, you know? And now with social media, it's like, well, you know, people are getting exposed, unfortunately, these, like, kids.
And by exposed, she means both figuratively, spilling secrets and private text conversations, and literally, making private photos and videos not so private. And the Boss Girls brought this up a lot during the conversation. They all knew multiple people who have been exposed in both of these ways.
And the fact that they feel kind of forced to share themselves in a way on this platform is scary to me. And because that seems to be the norm to them. And I tell them every day, I'm not that much older than you, but I could not even imagine. Couldn't even imagine.
On top of that, girls are expected to grow up fast now. At a young age, these girls are being sexualized. And I'm not going to lie, this part is kind of unsettling to hear.
And the older guys, too, like last year, they're on a hunt for little girls. What I'm telling you. Yeah, we're too. In high school, there'd be kids that are not even supposed to be seniors looking towards little girls. Like, it's so weird.
No,
like, they're like seniors going for like seventh grade.
No, not seniors.
Yeah, the ones
like juniors. They're like juniors and sophomores, and they're like they want the eighth grade so bad at our school.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, yeah. They just want little girls so
it's
bad.
Crazy.
They know they can take advantage of them because, like, yeah. I don't know, they're dumb.
And some of the girls said they feel very much not ready for this.
And I feel like, and I feel weird too because, like, I'm young and, like, I don't know. I'll just, like, look at myself different and, like, I won't, like, I don't know. Because, like, I'm young and that's weird. Like, people that do it at young age, like, I just don't know how, like, was, like, in their mind to do that. Like, people our age, like, freshmen, I feel like they're still young too because, like, they think they're grown and, like, they try to...
Given the very real pressure from boys, I must say that I was super impressed by these girls. And so are Shirley and Ashley. The boss girls seem pretty empowered to stand their ground, to say no when they feel uncomfortable, and to stick up for their friends. But they also have to deal with their parents, who pile on a different kind of pressure. The girls said sometimes their parents jump to conclusions.
Anyway, our parents nowadays, as soon as we say boyfriend, it's sex. Boyfriend is sex. A friend that's a boy is sex. Anything that assumes boy is just sex.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If I said that's my friend is a boy, they'd be like, that's a lie. You can't be friends with a boy. You have.
Yeah.
Like, is this always?
The message they've learned is basically that boys are up to no good. Any friendship with a boy has some element of sex. And remaining chaste is a big priority. Out of the 9 girls in the room, only one girl spoke up saying that she sort of kind of felt comfortable going to her mom about these things. It seems like for most of these girls, the extent of the conversation that they do have about sex is simply, don't get pregnant, and not much else.
I get where they're saying, like, yeah, I can't talk to my mom just because I feel like they're going to be judged or seen not innocent anymore, seen in a different way, or their parents are now going to think that they're doing something. Like, wait, why are you bringing that up if you're not doing it? So I feel like some of these girls are scared, like their parents are going to like cut them off and be like, you can't go out anymore. You need to be home after school, just because they're trying to talk about it.
The message hammered home is one based on fear. That as a girl, you must protect yourself from predators and pregnancy. That sex, intimacy, and relationships are fraught with hazards. And when you start from a place of fear, you know, I think back to a question we received from a listener. One that asked us, are teenagers taught that there's also joy to be found in sex and in intimacy and connection? How do you get to joy?
That was producer Sarah Ernst talking with the Boss Girls. That last question is a profound one. How do you get to joy? Part of the ability to have positive sexual experiences comes from being capable of speaking about a need or a fear or a desire, being vulnerable with yourself or another human. And that takes practice. For some, the ability to have those conversations could start with a parent.
When you were a little girl, when did you find out about everything?
Like sex?
Yeah.
This is Diane and her 14-year-old daughter, Infinity. We met Diane and Infinity at a sex ed class at OWL. Infinity is enrolled in the program.
Well, I was raised on a farm. which is like there's nothing more awkward than being in a family that doesn't talk about sex and then having to like watch and witness animals having sex. This is like the strangest phenomenon, right? Because it is so natural and so normal and also so not talked about.
When one of our listeners asked the show, how do parents feel about sex ed? There's obviously no one way to answer that. But we decided to invite Diane and Infinity into our studios to talk about how they navigate their relationship and how they're both thinking about sex, identity, and growing up. We started with their feelings about sex ed in school. Diane was sympathetic to public schools trying to navigate creating a sex ed curriculum. As an institution, Diane said public schools have to do so much more for kids than they were ever intended to do.
Feeding them, teaching them morals and values and how to be good team players and collaborators. I can completely understand the hesitance for public schools to take this on. That said, as a parent, I mean, certainly we have to seek education elsewhere because it absolutely isn't enough.
What made you think it was a good idea for me to go to OWL?
Oh, this is a great question. So I have a son. and when his dad and I got divorced when he was three, we actually wrote in the divorce decree that he would go to OWL classes because I felt that strongly about it. Especially as a teen, there's so much rumor stuff. There's so much stuff that you don't know. And there's like so much pressure to be perfect at all this stuff, right? Like you're supposed to know everything about sex without having ever had sex. I also think that having people in your community, having adults you can go to who are safe adults, who normalize this, who are people other than your parents. Like there might be a time, might be, you know, where coming to me isn't comfortable for you for some reason. And as much as I kind of hate that, I also want to prepare you for having a resource at that time. Have you ever felt, you know, pressure to be straight? So my understanding is that you identify as straight. And I remember, okay, great. That's changed. Fabulous. Okay, so now you just nodded your head now.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I've been off and on with being bi. And I've liked a lot of girls and I liked a lot of boys. Mm. But it was last year that I just felt straight because I felt really pressured on being straight. Because I was bullied a lot last year. And I'm over it now, but I'm really comfortable with who I am now. And I don't want that to change.
So I know that you know what pornography is.
Yeah.
What do you think about it?
I've been, you know, showed it. And, you know, I think it's just a normal thing because people, a lot of times guys, watch it because it makes them feel good. And if someone wants to feel good, then they should do what they need to feel good. It's just normal. And, like, people don't like things that are totally normal. And they like things that aren't normal.
I think you actually hit on something really important with what you just said, that there's this feeling like what is now normal is actually like an exception, right? So it feels like it's normal for everyone to look perfect and look beautiful on Snapchat filter. But like actually that's nobody's real life.
Yeah.
Right? That's nobody's real life. Yeah. Does that relate to pornography? Like, do you feel that way?
Yeah, like, in videos and stuff, they, like, edit a lot of the videos to make them look nice or, like, clean skin here and whatever. It's not natural. And the things that are natural should, you know, be natural and not, like, covered up. Just be yourself. I know it's hard.
How is it that it's so hard? Like, we're all ourselves, right? Like, and that we've only ever been ourselves. So how is it so hard to be ourselves?
Because we want people to think that we're perfect. And so we have to change ourselves in order to be what people want us to be. But really being ourselves is being who we are. But like last year in seventh grade, I didn't know how anymore because I was, you know, constantly like bullied and people made me feel like I couldn't think the things that I was thinking. Mm. And, but now I'm like myself again. Like I'm a weirdo and I love to read and I just show it. And if I feel like walking weird, I'll just walk weird.
Yes, you will.
And I don't care what people think of me.
When you think about consent, I know that you know what that means very well.
And yeah.
Do you see, like, consent violations at school, like with other people, like people touching people when they don't want, or either between adults and kids or kids and kids? Like, is that something that you see a lot of, or is that kind of?
I think at my school, I'm not saying all schools, because I have witnessed this at a lot of schools, but my school is very good about consent.
Like how so?
Like, the teachers know when to put their hands on someone. Like, if they're having bad behavior or something and they're, like, kicking and screaming, then you're obviously going to have to get them out of the room somehow. But putting your hands on someone without asking is a big issue.
And see, that's so interesting. So that's completely changed from when I was growing up. And in fact, when I learned about sort of the new rules of consent, really maybe 5-ish years ago, not that long, that's been a conversation. Honestly, it felt really weird. Like, really? Like, someone's going to ask to hug me? Like, oh, I can't just go up and hug someone? Like, I need to ask? And it makes social norms, I'll say, strange.
Yeah.
As compared to how I've been living. And certainly as a kid, as a teen, I mean, there was no conversation about consent whatsoever.
Yeah.
But at least for me, I mean, as a teenager, there was no space for me to say no. There was no space to not want something. I was supposed to want it. And it was even worse if I was in a relationship, right? Like, if it was my boyfriend or something, then there's just this assumption that yes is the answer. And there's also the assumption on the other side that he would just keep going and keep going and keep asking and keep asking, because that's what guys do. But that's what guys are supposed to do as well. And that was more than completely acceptable. And so I frequently found myself in situations that I didn't want to be in and didn't know how to get out of. And even if adults or other kids saw it, they just assumed that either it was normal or that I wanted it, or and nobody ever stopped to ask.
In another part of the conversation, the topic of gender performance came back up. But this time, Diane wondered what Infinity thought about traditional gender roles and the pressure that boys and girls are under to fit into them.
Do you feel like there's more pressure on girls to be pretty than guys to be handsome or cool? Or do you think it's the same? Or
I think it's the same. I think we all want to be cool. And I think we all want to be pretty in our own way.
Do you think guys can choose to play with their gender expression? Or for men, does it have to be more kind of like in line?
I feel like for everyone, they can just play around. Like
you think that's acceptable? Like, it's fine?
Yeah.
Like, a guy wears mascara and it's like, okay, cool.
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's just a beautiful thing that guys think it's great to do what they want to do with their body. Mm-hmm. Like, if they want to wear makeup, let them go wear makeup. Like, that's cool. And same with girls. Like, if they want to wear makeup, then let them wear makeup. It's just the fact that they feel like they have to feel pretty. Mm. They don't have to feel that. They can just be themselves. And if they want to look pretty like that, they can go ahead. If that's, like, who they are, then they can go ahead. But I just want people to know that they can be themselves.
Mm-hmm. But being yourself is way easier said than done, especially when you're still figuring out what being yourself even means. Well, at the same time, peer pressure and society's expectations are constantly knocking. Masculinity, in particular, can be a heavy burden to carry. When Second Greatest returns, we'll hear from the boys.
Well, boys need the same thing. How about they need some emotional support, things like that. You know, they need help, things like that.
Stay with us. Welcome back to the second greatest show on earth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Justine Paradise. There's this concept called toxic masculinity. It's associated with behavior and attitudes in men driven by sexism, emotional repression. And toxic masculinity teaches that the way to be a man is to be stoic and strong, but also dominant, aggressive, and tough. Toxic masculinity can exist on a mundane, everyday scale, but it can also escalate to violence.
We begin tonight with the bombshell announcement from Fox News that their biggest star is out amid growing reports of sexual harassment that sparked.
But long before masculinity gets too toxic, a lot of boys encounter baked-in expectations of what being a man means. All this as they're growing up, right at the beginning of their social and romantic lives. And boys growing up in New Hampshire are no exception. Producer Jimmy Gutierrez takes it from here.
You know, if you're like a strong, you know, man, tough, real, you know, people are going to look up to you and be like, I want to be like him, you know. If you're like a soft, like, you know, a little like soft wimp guy kind of, they're just going to be like, who wants to be like this guy? Nobody, you know.
When we asked people what questions they had around sex education in the state, a lot of them specifically brought up consent. And I think I know what they were getting at. How specifically are boys learning consent?
Have you guys learned about consent? And if so, what do you understand about it?
Like, it's like, you have to like have permission before you like act upon, you know, the sexual things.
Yeah, that's what consent is, you know, getting like granted like permission in a way to like do anything, pretty sure consent, but like, yeah.
To me, consent is like when we both mutually agree, and also when we're both like comfortable enough to do it, like we're both like ready, not like 75, 25, it's supposed to be like 50-50, like we're supposed to both mutually agree that we're ready to do this, like it's, that's consent to me.
I talked with Aiden, Muftar, and Muhammad at the Boys and Girls Club in Manchester. They all go to Central High School. They all came to the U.S. from Somalia and Kenya when they were super young, and they all agree that when it comes to being a boy today, you can be a lot of things, but you can't be soft.
Like, as a teenage boy, when you act tough, it's supposed to give you, like, clout or, like, some type of, like, popularity, or, like, the girls will start feeling you, and the girls will use you just for that.
They all also said that growing up as a black boy comes with extra challenges, where even if they wanted to be more vulnerable, they can't, either because of the neighborhoods they come from or from how they're perceived in such a white state.
They expect me to act, like, violent in a way, because that's what you usually see, like, you know, on TV and stuff like that. So, but they don't really, like, try to go and ask me, like, or try to see who I really am. They just, even like the clothes or like my persona, it looks like I'm like that, but I'm a nice person.
Bell Hooks, the black feminist writer, points out that we live in a patriarchal culture, a society that's designed for men to hold the power. That kind of society doesn't just hold girls back, but also boys. She writes that society sees boys as people to be feared rather than loved. And if we want boys to learn how to be vulnerable, we can't teach them that real men don't feel or don't express feelings.
The culture defines masculinity largely in terms of being strong and being powerful, as well as being promiscuous and having lots of sexual partners.
Andrew Smiler is the author of Dating and Sex, a guide for 21st century teen boys. He's also a therapist who's received his PhD from the University of New Hampshire. Smiler says the feminist movement of the 1960s and 70s helped educate working women and society more generally about women's issues. One way that feminists did this was through consciousness-raising events, which were kind of like community meetups in cities, to bring feminist theory out of academia and to the people whose lives it would change. Something that Andrew Smiler says is and has been much needed for boys and men.
Particularly when it comes to boys fighting against this structure for masculinity, there's not really a playbook, and there's not really other supportive individuals, whether they be other teens or other adults, that might help guide that.
But here in New Hampshire, look hard enough and you can find a few places and a few people doing their own version of consciousness raising.
Thank you so much, Eli, for coming to Second Start and being a part of our community today.
Second Start Alternative High School in Concord, I think the best way to put it is that it's small. There are just a few rooms, about 30 total students. We're in class with about 10 of them right now, almost all boys. And we're here with this guy, Eli Cootie.
I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Eli. I am from Equality Health Center. I've been doing this kind of work for over 15 years, but here in New Hampshire only for 2 years.
The Equality Health Center, which is based in Concord, provides a bunch of services like sexual health care and reproductive care. And over the past few years, with Eli's help, they've also started up these wellness talks in schools. Since Second Start is, again, a small alternative school, they do not provide health class. So this talk right here is their de facto sex education. Over the next hour, Eli goes in depth on healthy relationships.
I don't just mean boyfriends, girlfriends, whoever. I mean relationships with teachers, with family members, with people.
He talks about contraception, like condoms and dental dams.
It's funny. You can laugh. It's okay. You're allowed to laugh. It's all funny. It is funny.
And he talks about consent a whole lot. He teaches that a healthy relationship is dependent on healthy boundaries and continuously checking in on consent.
Boundaries are how far you're willing to go, what you want to do. Everyone has different boundaries. You can have sex with someone one night, the next night, and then on that fourth night, I don't want to have sex. I know my boundaries. I don't want to. That is where consent comes in. Consent is involved in everything. And, you know, there's a lot of things. Consent is sexy. It is sexy, but it's also mandatory. I think there needs to be more talk about your own personal body, your own boundaries, your own limits, and especially for young men, they don't get that a lot.
I got together with Eli after his talk, and I'm going to tell you this little story that'll help you better understand him and his work. When I said, hey, let's meet up at our studios where it's quiet and private, he insisted instead at meeting at a local cafe. I said, there's a lot of traffic, background noise, and it's not ideal for a mic. And he goes to me, well, we should absolutely have these conversations in public. And here we are making a podcast about sex ed, so what could I really say? Eli said growing up, school wasn't easy. He was rebellious, often getting kicked out of class for being talkative, I would guess a little combative. When it came to sex education, his all-girls Catholic school only taught abstinence education. Eli is also a trans man. After years at an all-girls school, living in a man's body was a learning curve, especially when it came to understanding the nuances on how men are expected to perform.
Being in a male body and going through the world, I mean, it's different. There are different expectations. If I act too feminine or if I'm too like, oh, you're just kissing up to the girls, that kind of thing, you know what I mean, type thing. It is like a buddy bro down a lot of times in a lot of places, and it's unnecessary.
It took a while for Eli to adjust to the aggression he'd get from other guys. He says he'd get a hard time for being close to women or just being interested in more than sex.
We need to take that, like, hardcore masculinity, put it away, the toxic masculinity, and put it away and realize that men have feelings and they don't have to act a certain way. I think to make progress in the world, we need to challenge gender, we need to challenge gender roles, and we need to educate kids that it's okay to talk about these things, and especially okay to talk about their body and their boundaries and consent. It's very, very important, and it'll affect them their whole lives.
For guys, the mixed message is, you know, at once that they should be scrupulous about consent and that they should be respectful to women, but also that the measure of a man, of a real man, is still sexual conquest.
This is Peggy Orenstein, and this is from an interview she had with Diane Rehm last month, talking about her research and her new book, Boys and Sex. For the book, Orenstein crossed the nation talking with over 100 teen boys on what it means to grow up today. She found some really meaningful changes, like true egalitarianism with girls and evolved conversations around healthy relationships and consent. One of her biggest findings was about the emotional life of boys. The boys she surveyed said they only felt free to express a very limited range of emotions. In fact, they basically felt allowed only two: happiness and anger.
even though so much has opened up to them and there's been changes in the culture, they still so much define manhood through emotional suppression. And they would talk to me about, you know, putting up a wall or training themselves not to feel, or a boy who, when his parents divorced, couldn't cry, so he streamed 3 Holocaust movies back to back.
It's in this vacuum, this void of emotional wholeness and tender adult care, where toxic masculinity can take hold, teaching boys instead to tough it out, man up, and don't be soft. But all of this bleeds into how our boys enter sexual relationships, too. Study after study shows that the vast majority of sexual violence is perpetrated by men. We're talking up to 90%. According to a 2017 UNH study, with straight couples, girls in New Hampshire were disproportionately victims of dating violence, more than 1 in 10 girls, a number that jumps even higher for teen girls of color or from girls from poor backgrounds. The part of the study that really shook me was when I got to what the report called sexual minority teens, or queer teens. That's where it found that more than 1 in 3 questioning teen boys have faced dating violence. Keep in mind, these are just numbers from kids who have spoken up. One solution is talking with our boys, consciousness raising. Andrew Smiler points to research that parents are less likely to have the talk with their sons than their daughters. That's because we think boys are more interested in sex, less in relationships. And because boys don't menstruate and aren't at risk of getting pregnant, there's less urgency. And when boys aren't getting the information they need, one place we know they go is online, and specifically to porn. Here's Peggy Orenstein talking about some of the problems with that.
They see something that men do to women instead of with them, that female pleasure is a performance for men. And, you know, again, if we aren't getting in there and talking to them about what's real and what's not real and what's missing in those images, you know, they're bringing those ideas into the bedroom. It's their de facto sex educator.
Porn's like, I don't know, it was almost like a learning site for me. I'm not going to lie. Like, there's like a lot you could learn from just watching, like, TV.
Aiden and his friends say that no one's ever talked with them about the pitfalls of watching porn.
There's like some crazy things on those websites, like things that like are not like regular almost, you know, like, you know, threesomes, orgies, things like that. And like that's what like it like puts little kids like kids and stuff like that, teens, all that, in their mind. Like it puts it in their mind to like, whoa, is this like regular? Is this cool? Things like that.
A few years ago, a qualitative study was done looking into porn consumption. Dr. Clarissa Smith from the University of Sunderland in the UK had participants fill out a 30-minute online questionnaire. She wanted to know why people go looking for porn. Almost 6,000 people responded. 2/3 of respondents were men and boys. And when it came to kids, she found out that porn is everywhere. It's scattered throughout Instagram, Snapchat, short GIFs, and memes sent back and forth with each other. Smith's work also found that kids who were taught abstinence only sought out porn more than their peers. Another surprising finding, arousal wasn't the only reason people used porn. People looked at porn for a bunch of different reasons. It included curiosity of other naked bodies, understanding what in fact turns them on, and even finding representation as it did for gay men. But as far as a sex educator, Smith admitted it is not a great model. But without producing better, maybe sexier, sex education, she doesn't think much will change. Back at the Boys and Girls Club, the boys said they have talked with adults about things like digital privacy. They talked about the pressure to share pics or show pics. They wondered about what life was like before cell phones. What a concept. And they talked even more about emotional suppression. At one point, Aiden turns to Muftar and says,
If you guys know this guy, you know, you guys, like, I don't know, his emotions are just, like, sealed in a way, you know. He doesn't, like, I call him an I don't care, you know, type person, you know. Everything about him is just, oh, I don't care. It's whatever, I don't care. I just want to know, like, why he's like that and, like, why he really doesn't, like, show emotion and, like, things like that.
I'm like an I don't care type of guy. Like, I don't know, like, I don't care what people say about me or anything. I'm just, like, me. Like, there's nothing, like, people can't, like, get me mad and nothing like that. Just, I don't care. I'm just like, I don't care type of person. I did cry sometime, but like I don't tell like my personal stuff to people. I just keep it.
You can hear Muftar trying to find the words to answer this. And as he's doing that, his friends press on a little more.
You will never know. Like, he'll be mad, you wouldn't know. if he's sad, you wouldn't know. But you can tell when he's happy, but that's it. That's the only thing you'll get.
As we kept talking, I learned something about Aiden, the boy who called Muftar an I don't care type person. Last year, his dad passed away. His dad was his role model, Aiden says, teaching him what it means to be a man. His closest friends like Muftar and Muhammad knew all about it, even visiting Aiden and family at the hospital. But through it all, Aiden says he kept a lot of that pain inside.
Me, I just don't like talking about things. Like, I don't I try to just not to talk about things because, like, I don't want, like, people, like, you know, feeling, like, certain ways for me, things like that, you know?
Let me ask you this. So, do you like it? Do you like taking care of your friends? Like, do you like it when your friends come to you and you can, like, help them out and give them advice?
Yeah, yeah. I always try to give them the best advice, real advice.
He's an energizer bunny. He gets everybody hype.
Yeah, you know, I always try to, like, be real with them, tell them what's best for them and all that. Because, you know, at the end of the day, they're my friends. I want them all to succeed, all that. I want us to all be, you know, together.
Can I ask you then why you don't like to share with them and lean on them?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not that type of person. I don't know. It's like I wasn't raised like that. I don't know. It's like probably like because like I didn't have no one to do, like, you know, do that for me. I don't know. It's just so I'm just used to it, I guess.
All the boys wanted each other to share more, but struggled with doing it themselves. They told me that they hope this changes.
You know, make like good things, you know, regular things, not like, you know, really, like all this violent stuff is regular, like, you know, all that. I wanted like the next generation to like, you know, make it like, you know, regular to be like, you know, who you are and stuff like that. You know, you don't have to always be like, you know, the tough guy on blog, stuff like that. You know, you could like, you know, be happy, be like nice little guy. Like, you don't always have to be, you know, big bad guy, you know what I'm saying? But yeah.
And they want this to be the last generation that doesn't get to fully feel their emotions.
That is it for the Second Greatest Show on Earth. Today's show was produced by Jimmy Gutierrez and Sarah Ernst with support from me, Justine Paradise. Our executive producer is Erica Janik. Maureen McMurray is still working on the doggy paddle. Music in this episode came from Blue Dot Sessions, Anne Annie, and Emily Sprague. Special thanks also to Kimberly Shepherd, Clarissa Smith, Cindy Lee Alves, Kathy Goldwater, and Morelli Miller-Young. For more information on what you can do to stop domestic and dating violence, you can visit the New Hampshire Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence or get in touch with DOVE, the Domestic Violence Emergency Project. The Second Greatest Show on Earth is 100% powered off of listener questions, your questions. So please let us know what you'd like to learn more about. You can send us your questions about New Hampshire or topics that you'd like us to cover. And you can do that either via email, secondgreatestshow@nhpr.org, or you can visit our website. There's a form there you can fill out. It's secondgreatestshow.org. The Second Greatest Show on Earth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.